This year will not be directly related to Parshat HaShavua, although it will explain something in next week's Sedra. It will also explain to us something later on in Parshat Chukat. But it's just a shiur that most probably I've wanted to do for 10 years and finally decided that the time has come that it should be done. And I had thought, because we've become more open to different ideas, and but I think I may be mistaken. I said parts of this year last week at the OU convention, so it certainly could not have been inspired by the by what's in the papers this morning and things that happened yesterday. It is purely, believe me when I say this, it is purely halacha. And there's I have an extremely important emotional need to explain the halacha, because I believe it simply has not been understood, and may very well be either because nobody really explained it well, or because there were those who just didn't want to hear. All right, I said enough. You don't have a clue what I'm talking about. You don't have a clue. You don't have a clue. So I'm going to give you a clue. It must be about 30 years now, certainly in its intensity, since 20 years ago. It is hardly discussed halachically now, but there was and there is an ongoing debate, a halachic debate. Halachic. Please don't make any connections to anything political. A halachic debate of land for peace. Are we permitted to give up land for peace? Are we not permitted to give land for peace? And there were many Torah articles that were written on both sides of the divide. Now, there are two kinds of halacha. There's, in a sense, a dimension of halacha that's stationary, permanent. The 39 categories of work on Shabbos, this is absolutely, absolutely permanent. This is fixed for all time. There may be questions, say, in terms of modern technology, where does it fit in? How do we understand the 39 categories of work? So in that respect, the halacha of Shabbos becomes dynamic, ever-growing, increasing. It has to be looked at again and again. But not the fixed principles. The fixed principles remain. The fixed principles of Yontif and of Kashrus and Muktzu, these are principles. We may have all sorts of new fangled technological advances that may call upon us to reinterpret and see, where does it fit in within the context of halacha? Certainly in the area of halacha and medicine, ongoing, I would say it's a matter of daily updating, because there are so many things that modern medical science is able to do today that was unthinkable years ago. We have to be able to see how new methods and new treatments, how do they fit in within the framework of the halacha. And I will only say in passing, and I feel badly that it's only in passing, but I think we should devote sometime possibly in the next few weeks a shiur dedicated to the memory of Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg, who died last week. Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg, posek for over 70 years in Yerushalayim. He was about 90, 91, I don't know. And his 22 volumes of Tzitz Eliezer are a wealth of halacha, and he was also one of the great poskim in medical procedures, medical ethics, a giant of a man, lived over there near Machne Yehuda, a giant. I don't think he has been sufficiently properly eulogized, and Yes Hashem will do that. So that medicine certainly is an area where you have to keep going back again and again. You have to look at it carefully and clearly and restudy. Because what may have been considered in the past ulcer may be today mutter, and the opposite may be true. We find out all sorts of new information. The idea, the classic example, the idea of heart transplant. There was shaking and quivering of halacha at the outset, but then now we're 30 years down the line, and of course it's being done within the strictures and the guidelines of halacha. The question of land for peace is a dynamic question. We have to look at it again and again in view of the situation that surrounds us. So I want to take that look. And there are a number of benefits. Number one, I said that I don't think that those who were opposed to land for peace were understood. I'm even going to go one step further. There was some kind of a blood libel. By blood libel, I mean the following. If you don't want to give up land that for peace, that means you value an inanimate shtick erd more than the life of an Israeli soldier. That was the picture that was painted. It was false. False, false, it was never true. That was never the consideration. We were just never understood. And I want to explain it in a way that maybe we will look at it again, and then we'll take a look, what did Chazal, what did our rabbis really say, and how might we apply it to our present day situation? That's the purpose of the shiur. I just hope that I get the message across properly. I would say that of the many responses that were written on the issue, I take two as representative of the two sides. They appear side by side in a halachic compendium called Tchumin that's put out by the Machon Lechaker Halacha in Gush Etzion. Rabbi Yisrael Rosen, volume 10, there are now 25 volumes out. Volume 10 has the tshuva of Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, who, so to speak, permits land for peace, for pikuach nefesh, to save lives were permitted to give up land. And the response to him is Rabbi Shaul Yisraeli Zechet Tzadok Levracha, who wrote the classic response to Rabbi Ovadia. I'm not going to take you through the whole tshuva. I'm just going to take a few vignettes that most probably tell us the whole story. A Gemara in Masechta Erev, and you have the whole Gemara there on your sheet. It'll take just a few minutes to go through the Gemara. I'll tell you in advance, right now, I'll just tell you, just watch me, and I'll tell you what the Gemara is talking about. And then we'll see the text of the Gemara itself. The Gemara is talking about goyim who come on Shabbos against Jewish cities. So the Gemara is going to say the following. If they are coming, al iskei nefashot, if they are coming to take lives, then the halacha is clear, there's no doubt about it. We take weapons and we mechal Shabbos and we fight back and people travel distances in order to save Jews. What about if they come al iskei mamon? If they're coming because they want to steal. They want to steal money. They want to rustle a few cattle. They want to steal. The Gemara is going to use the term kash v'tevin, straw and stubble, straw and hay. If they come in order to steal, then the halach is, can't be mechal Shabbos. You have to let them take the straw and the hay. Okay? Then the Gemara says, when is all of this said? All sorts of cities except one. If the city is a city, al-hasfar, sfar means border. If it's a border city, even if they come just to steal straw and hay, the halacha is you go out and you mechalel Shabbos. All right, that's the Gemara. The halacha is going to be like that clearly in the Shulchan Aruch. We're going to see it in the Rambam. All right. The Gemara discusses other rules of warfare on the Sabbath. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Nochrim Shitzoru Ala Yorushil Yisrael, Gentiles besieged an Israelite city on the Sabbath. Ein Yotzen Alein B'chlei Zayin, and Jews are not permitted to go out against them with weapons. Vein Mechallim Alein Et HaShabbos, nor may they violate the Sabbath because of them. And the Gemara says, Tanina Nami Hachi, this rule was also taught in a Braita. Nochrim Shitzoru, if Gentiles besieged, then if they come to steal, they come to steal, then you're not mechal Shabbos. Ba'medvar mamurim. Ah, but there is a qualification. In what case was this rule said? Kishabo aliske moment, if they come in order to steal money, a matter of money. Their threat was only the property. Avobo aliske nefoshes, but if they come over a matter of lives, their threat was to the lives of the people. Yotzen aleihem b'klei zainon. Then you're allowed to go out with your weaponry. Umechallim aleihem et haShabbos. So for that purpose, you may violate the Sabbath. Now, ubi'ir hasmucha l'svar. But in the case of an attack on a city close by the border of the Jewish area, even if they did not come over a matter of lives, El Aliske Tevim Kash, they only came over a matter of straw and stubble. Even straw, why does the Gemara use Kash for Tevin, straw and stubble? Because straw and hay are not terribly valuable. That the Gemara wants to point out, even if it's of very little value, but if they're coming against a bordered city, then you go out and you mechal Shabbos. It's not a matter of, well, whether they're coming for a lot of money or they're coming a little bit of money. No, you go out and you fight. And we'll have to see right away what the reason for this is. Why, if they come against a border town, and even if they're coming for straw and hay, you're permitted to be mechal Shabbos? You're permitted to go out with weapons. Now, just for a moment, I'm going to digress to number two, to the right, which is the Rashi that is underlined, and we're going to go right back to the Gemara. Rashi says, Lasfar. You see in the third line in Rashi, Lasfar. Ear. Rashi's words are so carefully chosen, and you will see soon why they are so carefully chosen. A border city, ir shemavdelet ben gvul Yisrael legvul haomos, a city that separates, that divides between the boundary of Israel and the boundary of the nations. Yotzen aleihen, you go out and you mechal Shabbos, shemo yilkidua, lest they capture that Jewish town, umishom tehenocha haaretz likavesh lifneim, and from there, once they have the border town, from there it's going to be easier for them to conquer the rest of the country. By the way, Rashi has not yet mentioned, nobody's mentioned Eretz Yisrael. Isn't that interesting? Nobody's mentioned Eretz Yisrael. And you'll see in a moment in the Gemara why Eretz Yisrael is not mentioned, because the halacha is going to apply wherever there may be a Jewish community anywhere in the world. Watch. Omar Rav Yosef, back to the Gemara. Omar Rav Yosef Bamin Yumi, Omar Rav Nachman, Rav Yosef Bamin Yumi said in the name of Rav Nachman, Ubavel, Ki'ir Hasmuchel Svar Damya. Bavel is like a city by the border. And the Gemara explains, V'tirguma, the term Babylon over here, in this context of this halacha, means Neherdo'a. Neherdo'a was a Jewish city, and beyond Neherdo'a, further inland, were many other Jewish communities. Anybody who would have captured Neherdo'a is now free to go against many other Jewish communities beyond Neher Dor. Now, isn't it fascinating? The halach is not talking about Gush Katif or the Tzafon or Bikat HaYarden. It's talking about any place where there is a Jewish community, and that Jewish community separates between the Goyim on one side and other Jewish communities, towns, villages, hamlets on the other side. If the main town is going to fall, all the rest may come down like dominoes. So the halach is not specifically Eretz Yisrael. You understand? This may be the most significant and important halach of all. Because those who were opposed to land for peace were accused that you won't give up what you call the holy land of Eretz Yisrael, even though it will save lives. It has nothing to do with holy land of Eretz Yisrael. You know what it all has to do with? It has to do with lives. What's most significant, I'm just wondering whether I'm saying this too early in this year. No, I'm going to leave an extremely significant idea that emerges from this Gemara. That means we're not talking over here, we're not talking about guys with big kippot surugot who are wearing Israeli flags around them and walking around with Rav Kook's svarim. This can be any place in the world. I don't know what examples we would have today. I don't know. If Borough Park falls, then Flatbush is not far behind. It has nothing to do with the sanctity and holiness of the land. It has to do with the sanctity and holiness of lives. If Neher Dor falls into the hands of marauders, they're just going to go out after other Jewish communities in Bavel. Now you see, the moment the Gemara says this one line, the entire halachic debate of the Gemara is completely taken out of the issue of the starry-eyed kids on the Gva'ot, or the Zionists who don't want to give up one inch, one sand, bit of sand of Eretz Yisrael. Nothing to do with it at all. The whole issue of the Gemara is lives. All is lives. And when you come down to the bottom line, those who said not to give up land, it was not because the land can't be given up. It's because giving up the land is going to cost lives. That was the point. I remember a debate that took place by me and Shul once, and this was in West Hempstead. And I don't know how I pulled it off then. I must probably never be able to pull it off again. But we had as a guest for Shabbos Rabbi Meir Kahana Hashem Yimkom Damo. Alright? So of course he presented his point of view. And there was a whole section of our leftists over there. And one of them got up and said, "You mean you won't give up land to save lives?" All right? Okay, you hear, this was the general theme. He was a master debater. Nobody should start up with him. So he just fired back instantly. "Would you give up the Kotel?" The leftist was all of a sudden thrown into, what will you give up? How much will you give up? It wasn't a real answer. It was just an answer to stop this guy alive in his tracks. All right? That was the point. But the halach is very clear. The Gemara is not talking about anything that relates to the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean that there isn't sanctity to Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean that according to the Rambam there isn't a mitzvah to conquer Eretz Yisrael. But that's not the essence of this halacha, which is Paskin in Shulchan Aruch. Okay, let's go a little further. So therefore it means the city of Neher Dor was a leading Jewish center, may be defended on the Sabbath against even a raid to seize property, because Neher Dor is the gateway to the Jewish settlement of Babylonia. That's what it was. the Gemara says, now the Gemara is going to prove, how do we know this? How do we know this halacha? So here we have a little bit of beautiful little piece of Tanakh, worthwhile knowing. The Gemara discusses an example from scripture of an attack upon a border city. Dorosh Rav Destoy de Min Biri. Rav Destoy of Biri expounded, V'argidu leDavid leimor hinei plishtim nilchomim bekeila. David was told that the Philistines are waging war against Keila. That was the name of a town in the south. I'm afraid to say, it just occurs to me now, the last time I looked at one of the maps of ancient Israel, Israel in times of David, Keilah was not far from present-day Sderot. I may be wrong, but so what, I'll get away with it anyway. You're not kidding. But it was down over there. Yes, on the way to Nachal HaBesor. He's going to pursue them to Nachal HaBesor. It's down in that, believe me, it's down in that general area. One thing I can say with absolute certainty, it's in Ma'arav HaNegev, the western Negev. That's where Keilah was. And that's why the Philistines were attacked, because they were close to, they were part of the western Negev. And they tell David that Keilah is going to be attacked, or is being attacked by the Plishtim. Tono, we learned, Keilah ir hasmuchu l'sfar haita. Keilah was a city that was on the border between Jews and the Philistines. V'hem lo bo'el al iske tebe v'kash. They were only coming to steal straw and hay. D'chsiv, because it says over there, V'hem o shosim et hagiranot. They were pillaging the threshing floors. What's left on the threshing floor? The stubble, the hay. But they're not harming anyone. Vayishal David b'Hashem leimor. David asks God, what should he do? Ha'elech v'hiketi b'plishtim ho'ela? Shall I go strike these plishtim? By the way, just derech agav, it might even sound that, you know, David is not just going to go out to kill Goyim. We're concerned about fine, innocent citizens. No, he's not going to do anything without God's divine okay. Vayomer Hashem l'David, God said to David, Lech v'hiketa, go. He asked from the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. V'hoshato et Keilah, and you're going to save the city of Keilah. Now the Gemara wants to know, what was his question? You know, if David's question is a halachic question, may he go on Shabbos? And the Gemara is going to say this whole thing took place on Shabbos. If it's a matter of a halacha, may I go on Shabbos to save the straw in the hay of stubble or not? You don't ask that question from the Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim is divine psak halacha in matters of this world. The halacha is lo bashamayim hi. Torah is not in heaven. Torah has to be decided by rabbanim, dayanim, chachamim, living in the here and the now. So the Gemara says, if he's asking the question, is he permitted to go on Shabbos to wage war with the Philistines or not? Shmuel had a bezdin. There were rabbanim who paskin. His local Orthodox rabbi is the one to whom you address this shaila. The Gemara says, you're right. What he asked of God was, will I succeed or not? The only one who can answer, will you succeed in the struggle, is only the Rabbeinu Shalom. But Lahalachi, he understood, of course he can go. He understood, it's a border town. Even though they're coming for straw and hay, but it's a border town, and you're allowed to be Michal Shabbos. There's no doubt in David's mind about that. That's the halacha. That's clear. What he wanted to know is, Rabbeinu Shalom, will I succeed or not? And God tells him, you're going to succeed. And where did he succeed? End of Gemara. End of Gemara. And when you take a look at the Gemara here, it's quite clear that a border city which holds the key to other Jewish communities, your Michal Shabbos, Michal Shabbos. By the way, one thing that never occurred to the Gemara was the idea of giving away the whole border city and everything that's in it to the enemy. That never occurred. That never occurred in the wildest dreams of Chazal. That's never occurred. So where does this now become part of the equation? So first of all, in number three, we have the Rambam. The truth is, we don't even have to look at the Rambam. The Rambam simply codifies this Gemara as halacha, goyim shetzaru, ala yorosh yisroel, im bo aliske momon. If they come about money matters, you're not mechal Shabbos, you don't wage war with them, ubir asmuch alisvar. Even if they only come for straw and hay, you go out and you're mechal Shabbos. And out of that, the Rambam goes on to say, you can't wait. You don't stand around asking shaylus. You just go immediately. You don't say, wait, maybe if I leave after Shabbos, I'll still be able to get there to say them. No, you move instantly with speed. Yes?
The question is, this, I agree with the Gemara, I agree with the law, what are the other precautions? What are they calling for the export ships for free?
Wait, we're getting there, we're on the direction.
If he would have not succeeded, would he have had to go anyway?
If what?
If he was told you won't succeed, would he have gone?
She asked if God's answer to him would have been, no, you're not going to succeed, what would he have done there? What a beautiful dilemma. I like that. I like that.
According to what you said, he would go anywhere.
Or, I can give you the other side of it. If he's not going to succeed anyway, why be Michal Shabbos? The only reason to be Michal Shabbos is because there's a possibility. Even if it's only a remote possibility, by the way. Even if it's only a remote possibility that I'm going to succeed, I have a responsibility to go. I mean, it's not for me to decide. And if a doctor operates on somebody and there's a remote possibility of saving the person, you do it. Over here, he's told, you're not going to succeed. Then I think he would not be Michal Shabbos. But we were saved the dilemma. David was saved the dilemma. Yes. Right. That's only true if I don't have a divine directive. If I have a divine directive that says, no, you're going to fail miserably. So then what am I left with? Should I be Michal Shabbos or not? If I'm going to fail and I'm not going to accomplish anything for anybody, of course I shouldn't be Michal Shabbos. But that was, oh, you see? I'm afraid I'll never finish. I want to read now. A few sections, selected sections from Rav Yosef's tshuva, and then a selected section from the tshuva of Rav Shaul Yisraeli. Down at number four. V'hine, this we already know. This is Rav Avadi Yosef. V'hine Rashi Shon Pidesh. Rashi there explained, and we learned the Rashi. Shebi'ir asmuch l'sfar. And he brings the words of the Rashi, a city by the border, Shemavdila ben Gvul Yisrael leGvul HaAmim, that separates between the boundary of Israel and the nations. Yotzim aleim tamid, you always go out to war, Shema yul kidua, lest it be conquered. Umishon tehei haaretz nocha licha veitrifneim, and from there the land is going to be easy to be conquered. So writes the Or Zeruah. And we find that in Gemara Sanhedrin, he brings the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's really the first Mishnah Sanhedrin, a very amazing halacha. There's a halacha in Torah about an Ir HaNidachat. An Ir HaNidachat is a city where the entire city worshipped idols. The whole city. The halacha is you're supposed to destroy the city utterly. Not only men, women, and children, but all of the possessions of the city have to be brought into the city square and burned to the ground. That's the halacha of Ir HaNidachat. The Gemara says, Ir HaNidachat lo hoye v'lo nivra. There never was an Ir HaNidachat. I think that I think that there's a Gemara that says if there's one mezuzah in the city, it's not a nira nidachat. One mezuzah saves the city. So I remember once, you know, in the struggles between religious and non-religious, they said, you know, if there wasn't a mezuzah in the city, Chabad would make sure to put up a mezuzah in the city. And then there were others who would remain unnamed. If there was a mezuzah in the city, they'd take it down. Let those chilenim get the word. So the Gemara says, when is that true? And listen to the hashkafa of this halacha. When do you destroy a city that are all idolaters? Only if it's within Eretz Yisrael, within a Jewish community. If it's al hasfar, the same word. If it's on the border, you don't destroy those idolaters. A Jew, an idolater, will be the one who's going to save the rest of the Jewish community or Eretz Yisrael. On the border, you don't destroy an Iran Yidachav. Okay? Shemo Yishmu Akum, lest Goyim will hear V'yavo, and they will come V'yachrivu et Eretz Yisrael. There the Gemara uses the word Eretz Yisrael. Because the halacha of Iran Yidachav can only take place in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore the halacha is, there's this city on the border, all idolaters. No, they're going to be the protection. King Kosovo Rambam. Huh?
I'm sorry. If they're sitting right by the border, they're going to be strong idolaters.
Is it what?
They should influence the people in the
Jewish town. So you know what I have to do? I have to bend before the halacha. The halacha has obviously made a determination over here that lives are immediately in, would be immediately placed in danger in the event that this city will be destroyed. What might happen later in the future? Two possibilities. They may have a negative influence, and then somebody will open up a Bet Chabad. That's all. And they'll all become shlichim. Can't be sure about that. But the danger to Jewish lives, that's first. Okay. Next slide. Here is where Rabbi Avadya Yosef, now listen to this carefully. I'm going to have to read, first I'll tell you what he says, then I'm going to have to read the sentences. There is one of the Rishonim, the Ra'avan. The Ra'avan was a grandfather of the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, one of the great Rishonim. The Ra'avan says, why is a border town different? And why does the Gemara say that by a border town you go out in your Mechal Shabbos, even if they only come for straw and stubble and hay? He says a different pshat than Rashi. Rashi's pshat was because if this city falls, all the Jewish communities further are going to be in grave danger. He says something completely different. He says when Goyim, here is the non-Jewish community, here's the Jewish community. Here's the city, okay? When they come against this border city, even if they're coming for straw and hay, they won't be afraid to kill. They're coming for straw and hay also raises the possibility that they're going to kill. Why will they feel that they can kill? Because they can immediately run back to this side and they're going to be protected by their own community. So they'll just run right back. Do you understand the difference between Rashi and the Ravan? Here's the border city. Rashi is worried about the Jewish side. That if this city falls, on the Jewish side there will be grave danger. He's talking about a completely different point of view. The Goyish side, they come from their city to steal. They're not going to be afraid to kill because they can immediately run back. Now watch. Now I'm going to read this paragraph because you wouldn't believe me unless I'd read it. Ulam haravan pidesh. The Ravan explains shekivan shehi smucha Lisvar, because the city is near the border, in Yamdu Yisrael al Mamonam, if Jews are going to stand up to protect their money, Yahargum, they're going to kill them. V'lo Yiro, they're not going to be afraid. When the Goyim come against the border of the city, they're not going to be afraid. Kivin Shesmuchim Hem LeGoyim Acherim, because they're right close to other Goyim, and they can immediately run back. L'chein Mechal Masalem Shabbos L'Hatzel. That's why we're permitted to be Mechal Shabbos, because these Goyim who come for straw and hay, they may very well kill. So therefore, Rav Avadya says, according to this, it seems Shebizmanenu, our days, I'm reading the words, Shein lahem makom lanus, they don't have any place where to run to. Kivin she'ezas Hashem Yisbaruch yesh itonu matose krav, because we have fighter planes, sheyuchlu lahamri lemerchakim gedolim, that can go off and fly in long distances, tov dakot svurot, in seconds, and bomb the enemies and their houses, if they're going to try to hurt the Jews of Eretz Yisrael. I don't know the year in which he wrote it, and he says, Masim b'chol yom, happens every day. They do this every day against the terrorists that come from Lebanon. This must have been 20 years ago or 25 years ago. So therefore he says, what are we worried about? Goyim are going to come from this side, and they're not going to be afraid to kill. Why? Because they can run back immediately to their own territory. But that's not going to help them, because our fighter planes are going to smash them to bits. Ain't nafgamina. According to the Ravan, there's no difference between a border city, Bein Ir, Asmuch L'Sfarolo, V'Tzorachian. Is that the reality? It's not the reality at all. It's not the reality. When I say that Halacha has to be looked at again and again, because it's dynamic, it's not static, it's not permanent, it's not fixed. For how long have we not gone after them and destroyed them in their houses? And when we wanted to do it last week, hundreds of Palestinians surrounded the house. In the Oslo Accords, we gave up the right to hot pursuit. So here, Rabbi Avadya Yosef, who at one time in history wanted to say, and by the way, what's difficult about this is, everybody paskens like Rashi. And he brings this Rishon who says a completely different idea of why Yemechal Shabbos V'ir HaSmuch L'Sfar. And then what he says is, well, no problem, we're just going to go after them and blow them to smithereens. But we don't do that. We haven't done that for a long time. What really happens as a result of the reality on the ground, and it's not only a reality on the ground, I mean, they're not afraid to come any place. We have restrained ourselves. And I saw it yesterday. We're back to that again. Restraint is strength. The restraint that is strength has cost us so many lives. It's unbelievable. So here I'm giving you a psak halacha that was used by people to justify giving up land. It certainly doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. I'll tell you another secret. I'm ready to say, and I'm being very kind, 99% of the people who quoted Rabbi Avadya Yosef's psak never read it. I'm being kind because I'm assuming that there's 1% that may have read it, and I'm not so sure about that. But I have to say, in his defense, I don't think anybody, if they didn't read it, they certainly never got to his conclusion. If you look down to number 8, Maskana, here is his conclusion. Now listen to the conclusion. The conclusion is nothing like the bits and pieces that make up the totality of the responsa. Amur Nikol Homo, what we take out of all that has been said is, Shem, listen carefully to every word here is weighed and measured. Shem yidbarer lemalo mikol safek. If it would become clear beyond any doubt, sheyesh shalom emet beinenu levein shcheinenu, if there will be real peace between us and our neighbors, ha'aravim, im yuzru lehem hashtachim, if the territories will be returned to them. Wait a minute, that's not the whole story yet. On the other hand, kayemet sakonas milchama miyadit im lo yuzru lehem hashtachim. On the other hand, we will be faced with immediate war. In other words, the question of pikuach nefesh is right here and now. If we don't give them back the land, yes, laharzil hamashtachim, then we should give them back the land. Mishum shein l'chod dover homi b'snei pikuach nefesh. There's nothing that stands in the way of pikuach nefesh. The real debate over here was not over a piece of land. What emerges, and this is what was true at the beginning. Anybody who sees the halacha of ir hasmucha l'sfar, which is passed in the Shulchan Aruch or Achayim, Simen Shin Chav Tes, it was never a question about the sanctity of land. It was always the question of the sanctity of life. The debate was, there were those who said that if you give back land, you'll save lives. And there are those who said that if you give back land, we're going to lose lives. That was the real debate. Now, if that was the real debate, then we have to take a look in the longer view of the last, 5 years. We left Lebanon, we lost lives. We left Gush Katif, we're losing lives. You know, we have to take a look at what's the reality? What is the reality? By the way, we haven't seen the reality yet. Which brings me to... Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. As soon as I said it, I know I shouldn't have said it, and I expected that somebody was going to relinquish. You're absolutely right. By the way, Rav Shol Yisraeli, in his response to Rav Avadya Yosef, says that the Rav Avadya has already made a mistake when he refers to the land of Eretz Yisrael as Shtachim, territory. He should not have said that. It's not just territory. So, I stand corrected. I once said, next week said we were going to have the nocturnal struggle between the angel of Esav and Yaakov. Yaakov is sort of fleeing from his brother Esav. During the night, he takes his entire family across Mavar Yabok, the waterway of Yabok, and then he goes back alone to the other side of the river because he left Pachim Ketanim. He left small jars there. And a man accosts him, and they end up locked in struggle. And the struggle is going on for hours. And the man has not been able to steal the Pachim Ketanim. Now there's going to be one of my great puns, and I can't help it. I can't help it. So just bear with me. As it's coming toward morning, the Gemara in Chumash says that Yaakov turns to him and he says to him, "V'chiganevata, o kubiustusato, are you a thief or are you a murderer?" It dawns on Yaakov Avinu, the man is not interested in the jars. If he's interested in the fashlugene jars, and he can't steal them, so you know what you do? Go steal somebody else's fashlugene jars that cost pennies. What's he struggling with me for hours about the kashvateven jars? Doesn't make any sense. And during the course of the night, as the struggle continues, Yaakov doesn't understand. You're not winning the struggle against me. Why are you struggling? And then, as I say, it dawns on him. The jaws, that's not what he's interested in. is interested in my life. It's a struggle of life and death. It's not a piece of land. That was not the struggle. Nonsense. That was never the struggle. They don't want us here. They don't want us here. They want dead Jews. So that the struggle, this so-called halachic debate of land for peace. So I want to tell you, I said this, I think, on Shabbos Shuvah, I said, one of the most destructive ideas that we've fallen prey to are slogans that are empty of all meaning. But slogans are catchy. Slogans also give you an entree into a certain world. Like if I'm ready to give land for peace, then I'm part of a certain intelligentsia. I'm not like these keepers, Ruga, big white keepers, Ruga, payers, sitters, characters running around who are not ready to give up land for peace. Land for peace was never true. There was never a single moment in our modern history that land for peace was true. It was never true. It was a slogan. It was completely empty. I gave the example of another empty slogan, but I don't think anybody ever lost lives. The first slogan in modern history was Tippecanoe and Tyler too. I told you about Tippecanoe and Tyler too. In the 1847 or 1840 campaign for president in the United States, so the vice president was Tyler. The fellow running for the presidency was William Henry Harrison, 29 years old. So 29 years later, somebody came up with a slogan, Tippecanoe and Tyler too. Tippecanoe meaning Harrison, and Tyler was the vice president. It meant nothing. Did it say anything good about anybody? It didn't say anything. But in hundreds of thousands of homes, they said, Tippecanoe and Tyler too. Tippecanoe and Tyler too. And somebody writes about it. That was the end of people thinking ever again about who to vote for. It was all over. As Charles M. Schulz, I quoted Charles M. Schulz. Charles M. Schulz said, philosophy and politics are not bumper stickers. You can't take great ideas and reduce them. Like, there's another slogan. There are so many slogans that are so destructive, so destructive. Restraint is strength. Why? Maybe restraint is weakness? Who says that restraint is strength? If it's a kasha of somebody who wants to talk Lashon Hara and he restrains himself, Ezehu Gibor HaKovesh et Yitzro, who is a strong, the one who's able to overcome his Yitzro, there restraint is strength. But if restraint means that we permit our enemies to arm themselves for 5 years in the north and we're going to do it right now in the south, the same thing. There's no ceasefire. The ceasefire is just another cover and an excuse for bringing in more weapons. So number one, what I wanted to explain, we're not finished yet. We're far from finished. What I wanted to explain is it was never true that a piece of land is worth more than a Jewish life. This was a blood libel of the left against the right. It was never true. Rav Shaul Yisraeli, I'm going to show you in a moment. Rav Shaul Yisraeli says, because in one of the paragraphs here that I didn't read, it's right here, it's on the spot. Rav Avadya Yosef says, if the generals and the politikayim, if they say that by giving away land, we will save lives, then we follow what they say. So Rav Shaul Yisraeli asks a very simple question. Here we have a Gemara in Masechet Erevin, we have a Rambam, we have a Shulchan Aruch, Goyim who are coming against a border city. Why doesn't the Shulchan Aruch say, you know what, we have to ask. We have to ask the military people and the politicians, how do they assess the situation? There's no word of it in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that we have to get the opinions of people, what should we do? No. And you know why? And here I believe is the most significant point that was lost by everybody. Except Rav Shaul Yisraeli says it clearly. When the Chachamim said, if they come, goyim come against a border town, even if they're only coming for straw and hay, your Mechal Shabbos, you know what they've just done? They have given their own assessment of the situation for all time. They have assessed the situation and they've come to the conclusion, don't ever, ever in history think otherwise. If they are coming against the border city, the halacha says, you must assume that this is grave danger for Jewish lives. So there's no point in asking anybody. Another question, of course, that he asked from Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef has another tshuva elsewhere, where he talks about somebody who has to eat. It's a question of whether somebody should eat on Yom Kippur. You have to ask doctors. And in this tshuva here, Rabbi Yosef also compares eating on Yom Kippur and doctors with generals and deciding whether to give away land. So he says, Rav Shaul Yosef says, I don't understand. Rabbi Bad Yosef in a different tshuva says that you can't depend on a doctor who's not Shomer Torah mitzvahs. You have to have a doctor who's Shomer Torah mitzvahs to decide whether to eat on Yom Kippur or not. Oh, would that raise a serious question? What about a general who doesn't believe that we had any right in capturing lands? What happens if his whole Weltanschauung and philosophy is anti-Torah? Maybe he can't paskin either? That's a serious question on Rabbi Shaul Yisraeli, on Rabbi Avadi Yosef. But Rabbi Shaul Yisraeli said the truth. The Gemara is telling us that there has been a decision taken by Chazal. They've assessed the situation for all time. It's an amazing, it means that they, an amazing halacha. Don't ever trust anybody. It's not a question to be brought to any kind of other authority. This din in Shulchan Aruch. Obviously, when we take a second look at this whole question of land for peace, anybody who is open enough to take a look at it, I think that we've learned a great deal during the course of the last 13, 14, 15 years, and I submit that the weight of painful experience is that land for peace is an empty slogan that has absolutely no meaning and has been destructive. One final part. I mean, I can go another hour or two, believe me, but number 10 is something that this is something that I said the first Shabbos, September 11th, 11-9. No, by Israelis it would be 9-11. September 11th, 1993, on Thursday, they announced that the PLO is recognizing Israel, on Monday, the 13th, was the handshake on the White House lawn. I never occurred to that Shabbos in between was 9-11. Wow. 1993. They unleashed such terrible forces against us. The following is the drasha that I said. In number 10, we have the end of Parshas Chukas. Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amori, asking him, can we go through your land? We will not take anything, won't do anything. If we eat or we drink, we will buy. Sihon says no, prepares for war against the Jewish people. War takes place. Israel crushes and conquers Sihon. And then it says, Pasuk Chof Hei, 25. Vayikach Yisrael et kol ha'orim ha'ele, Israel took all of these cities, Vayeshev Yisrael b'chol orei ha'amori, and Israel settled down in all the cities of the Amori, b'cheshbon u'b'chol benoteha, in Cheshbon and all the cities around it. What's Cheshbon? So the Gemara says, ki Cheshbon ir Sichon melech ha'amori. Cheshbon was the city of Sichon, king of the Amori. He had waged war against the first king of Moab, and he took all of his land from him until the Arnon River. Now, number one, why is it terribly important for us to know that Sichon conquered Cheshbon from the first king of Moab? And if we wouldn't know this, our Yiddishkeit would be lacking. And then the pasuk goes on to say, Al kein yomru hamoshlim, therefore, the balladeers, you know, those who play the songs of war, you know, sink the Bismarck, the songs of war, are the ones who said, Bo Cheshbon, come to Cheshbon, Tibonaviti konein ir Sichon, let the city of Sichon be built and established. You know, it sounds much like you're talking about Yerushalayim, Tibona v'tikonein, the Tav and the Vav that is written very often after Yerushalayim is Tibona v'tikonein. Ki eish yotzo mi Cheshbon, because fire went out of Cheshbon, lahova flame from the metropolis of Sichon, and it destroyed Or of Moab and Bale Bamot Arnon, the heights of Arnon. So I heard 50 years ago, how do you like this? 50 years ago, I heard from my Rosh Shiva, I was learning then in Baltimore, Rav Yaakov Yitzchak Halevi Rudeman Zecher Tzadik L'Racha. The Gemara says, Am al kein yomru ha-moshlim. The balladeers, the Gemara says, Moshlim are those who say parables. And the Gemara says, Al kein yomru ha-moshlim. Who are the Moshlim? Ha-moshlim b'yitzcham. Those who rule over their inclinations. A tzadik. What do the Moshlim say? We have to make the cheshbon, the reward for a mitzvah and what you lose by doing a mitzvah, the reward for an avera and what you lose by doing an avera. So the Gemara says this whole story about cheshbon is talking about averas. What's it have to do with averas? So the Chashiva said the following: Cheshbon was a border city; it was on the border of Moab when Sichon gathered all of his forces for the invasion of Moab. The high command of Moab gathered. And the question is, should we commit forces to the defense of Cheshbon or not? And of course, I don't know, Commander-in-Chief gets up and says, you know, Cheshbon is a flea-bitten town. It's a nothing with nothing. It's one street. There's a general store, a lockup, and a saloon with sliding doors. There's nothing strategic in Cheshbon. Cheshbon is just plain insignificant. We should go ahead and send our forces to protect Cheshbon? Yeah, forget it. So they make a decision, strategic withdrawal. They move about 20 kilometers back from Cheshbon, and then they set up the first line of defense. Sichon marches into Cheshbon without shooting an arrow. And he bides his time. You know what he does? He starts bringing in men, material, equipment. He doesn't even have to dig tunnels in order to bring weapons into Cheshbon. He brings it in by the light of day. And you know what ultimately happened? Cheshbon became such a fortress. And out went the flame from Cheshbon, fire from the city of Sichon, and he ultimately destroyed all of Moab. So the Hashiva said, that's what the Gemara means. You have to be careful of the Yetzirah, those who rule over the Yetzirah. Yetzirah doesn't come to a Jew and say, I want you now to go eat a Trefe McDonald's on Yom Kippur Shechalias B'Shabbos. You know how he starts? He needs a little beachhead. He'll come, say a little Lashon Hara. It's not really Lashon Hara, the guy deserves it. He's so such a nothing. He's such a danger to the community. Talk a little Lashon Hara. And the guy talks Lashon Hara. So you know what happened? The Yetzer Hara has a little beachhead, a little cheshbon all over there. A few weeks later, he's going to tell him, do another little Aveira. And ultimately, you know what's going to happen? The Yetzer Hara is going to conquer the heart of the human being. That's how the Rosh Yeshiva explained the Gemara in Bava Basra, that says, Alkein Yomru HaMoshlim, those who rule over their inclinations. So I said then, you can't forget the reality of the Marshal. The reality of the Marshal is that, and that may be the most important reason why the Gemara tells us this. Who has to know about Cheshbon and Sicha? Nachamol Cheshbon. What difference does it make in our lives? Oh, does it make a difference in our lives? Moav relinquished Cheshbon to Sichon. And you know what happened as a result of relinquishing it? They lost all of Moav. That's what I said on 9/11, 1993. Any weakness that's shown on our part is going to cost us dearly. And unfortunately, it has cost us very dearly. But the point, the main point that I wanted to make is that there was a blood libel against the people of the right. And I heard people said it. Chabonin yelled at me that I don't care about lives. I'm totally unconcerned. I think that a piece of Eretz Yisrael is worth more than a Jewish life. Nobody ever said it. Nobody ever thought it. That was not the issue. You know where that becomes an issue? That becomes an issue when the Rebbein Shem sends Yehoshua ben Nun into Eretz Yisrael to conquer the land. Wait a minute. If Pikuach Nefesh stands in the way of everything, we can't lose Jewish lives? Yehoshua should have remained in the desert. We're going to go to war? We didn't go to war. People die in war. Now, obviously, the halacha is saying, the Rebbein Shem is telling him, you know, if lives have to be lost to conquer Eretz Yisrael, that's what you're going to have to do. But that was not the debate. That was the debate of Yehoshua. That was David's problem. And the halacha is clear that we wage war in order to capture, conquer, and hold Eretz Yisrael. But that was not the debate over here. Over here, the debate was a question of handing over pieces of Eretz Yisrael to a sworn enemy that we said will clearly endanger lives. And that was the fact. And there are others who said, no, we're going to save lives this way. So I say the reassessment and the second look that we're taking at the halacha today is, what are the last 13 years since Oslo proven? I think the proof is very, very clear.